Good morning, Tucson, Arizona. Welcome to The Morning Voice. I am your host, Grant Kruger. Really, really excited to be here with you this Wednesday morning, May 14th. Lots of cool things happening in the Old Pueblo right now. Certainly one of the best times of the year for the restaurant business. That weather right now at 6, 7, 8 p.m. is just absolutely perfect.
Is it
outside.
Ever?
We couldn't have asked for a better weekend. Last weekend, we had Mother's Day. We had Mexican Mother's Day. We've got the University of Arizona graduation coming up this week. This is the highest of high seasons. You know, in fact, I'm not even going to have restaurant tours on this week. We're going to have Janet Wittenbraker coming up at hour two. She's going to be the City of Tucson, Ward 3 City Council candidate. And we'll talk about that race and some of the things happening in the City of Tucson and how the tides might be turning just a bit politically. Maybe there is a chance for a Republican candidate out there in one of these wards. We're going to break that down starting at 8 a.m. But at the top of the news today, there was a story yesterday that really rang with me and kind of weighed on me. And it happened to be the Pete Rose story of all things, right? Yesterday, if you weren't paying attention to the news, baseball commissioner Rob Manfred removed Pete Rose, Shoeless Joe Jackson, and other deceased players from Major League Baseball's permanently ineligible list. Now, what gets me all excited about that one? Pete Rose happens to be one of my favorite Major League Baseball players of all time, right? An undersized guy from a downtrodden Midwestern city. It happened to be Cincinnati, not Detroit here, but nonetheless, you know, I can relate to that sort of thing. And he holds, you know, so many records in Major League Baseball. We're talking about, you know, the all-time hits leader in Major League Baseball. He actually has more career wins as a player than any other human being in the history of professional sports, right? Like, this guy was an absolute stud and played up until 1986, where he became a player manager. However, in Pete Rose's illustrious history, his career was marred by an absolutely mortal sin in baseball, right? And if you remember in catechism class, since we had a new pope elected last week, there was a cardinal or mortal sin and there were venial sins, right? And the cardinal and mortal ones were the real bad ones. And the venial ones were things that you could say a few Hail Marys or Our Fathers and get your way out of trouble in some capacity. And so the mortal sin in baseball was gambling, right? And it really tied back into the 1918 World Series, where the Chicago White Sox, you know, had fixed that World Series. And it was one of the biggest embarrassments on our national pastime. And ever since then, that separation between church and state, professional sports and gambling, really had to be denoted. And as such, players from the Chicago White Sox were banned in perpetuity for life from the game. And because Pete Rose, at some point, whether he admitted it or not, and in later books, he sort of admitted to betting on his teams. He claimed he bet on his teams only to win, but because he was involved in sports gambling, he was banned for baseball from life. He committed the absolute most mortal of mortal sins at that particular time. Now, mind you, sports gambling is now not only completely legal, I could do it right here from my phone while I'm telling you this radio show. I could
regulated airwaves.
Correct, right? Yeah. There's DraftKings and FanDuel and so many options at this point to bet. Like, maybe we should look back at people and say, maybe that wasn't as bad as what we thought. In the same way you think about people in jail for marijuana charges or something when it's now legal. But I think about these mortal sins, right? And things that you do that are just so unforgivable that there is no other choice except for the absolute highest penalty that could be doled out. In baseball's case, it was a lifetime ban. And so it's pretty easy to unban somebody after their life is over. Pete Rose passed away in September of 2024, and so we're not really changing anything. He's going to have an eligibility and a vote for the Hall of Fame in 2027, along with Shoeless Joe Jackson. But ultimately, this isn't going to change anything for their lives, or even really their family's lives at this point, when we're talking about an event that happened so long ago. But the idea of mortal sin really stuck on me yesterday, an experience I was having in one of my restaurants, right? It was brought to my attention that one of my staff members had money stolen out of her purse. And we keep employee lockers. We try to keep our staff from having their purses on the floor. You certainly don't want to see one of my staff members with their cell phone on the floor. Even if they were texting the repair guy or something to fix something, you're going to think, hey, texting her boyfriend. She's not paying attention to my needs. And so we keep, you know, some employee lockers. And our employee had reported money being missing. Well, sure enough, another employee a couple weeks ago had reported money being missing out of the lockers. And then one more as well, too. And suddenly I began to think, gosh, I've got an epidemic going on over here. Now, fortunately, today's camera technology has gotten better and cheaper, and we happen to keep a fair number of cameras around the restaurant establishment. I don't love cameras, to be honest with you, right? Especially in, when you've got a bar environment, because sometimes people are coming in with people called, oh, say, not their wife or girlfriend, or are perhaps untruthful about their whereabouts. And the last thing you want to do is have these sort of things.
You're not going to run a live stream on the Union Public House.
0%
Facebook
page. Hey,
over
come
here. On in. Look who all's here.
0%. But nonetheless, there are certain well-placed cameras that make a lot of sense. The front and back door, for example, of establishments. It's quite often that I'm sued or threatened to be sued. And, you know, annotating when somebody entered the establishment and what time they left, evidence that could sort of hold up in a court of law, is quite frankly good practice in today's world, in the business world. And we happen to have a camera by one of the back doors that has these employee lockers there. And so yesterday I began to watch the film, right? And it took some time to go through. But sure enough, midway through one of the shifts, I find one of my absolute best employees. I'm going to give this girl's name as Susie to protect the innocent, because I've got a decision to make later today when I leave this particular studio. Let's say Susie happens to be one of our best servers in the entire restaurant, right? Well-liked, hardworking. She's, you know, sort of she's got some hard miles on her, but she's a really, really loved employee around here who, quite frankly, like, is beloved by the guests. And I've got hard video of her removing $10 from another employee's purse, right? Taken right out of that locker. And so in my world, irregardless of how great you are on the field, even if Susie is the Pete Rose of servers over here in our establishment, she's sort of committed a mortal sin. Like, I'm stuck now in this odd situation that employers have so often, so unfortunately in the world, where I've got a rock and a hard place. Do I fire one of my absolute best servers the day before graduation weekend, where I have absolutely no real backup plan to cover the restaurants? Or do I let this go for a couple of days and survive graduation week and do it afterwards? We're talking about a theft from one employee to another. She wasn't necessarily stealing from a customer. She wasn't directly stealing from the business, but she is in fact stealing, right? Taking from the team in some capacity. And so for me, the choice is clear, much like it was for the baseball commissioner in 1989 with Pete Rose, that in spite of the greatness, in spite of the records, in spite of Susie's performance in the restaurant as being one of our key employees and such a beloved staff member, I'm going to have to walk into that restaurant in just the next couple of hours and terminate one of my most favorite employees that I've had over the last few years. And it really breaks my heart. And it's kind of one of those decisions that doesn't show up in the balance sheet of a restaurant in some capacity. This isn't on your P&Ls. This isn't on a tax return. But it's actually like one of the toughest decisions I think we can make when you've got to decide between what is forgivable and what's not forgivable. What's your mortal sin and what's your venial sin over here? I can deal with the venial sins. We're in the business of second chances, right? We're all about that in the restaurant business. Heck, we're in the business of third or fourth chances in some capacity. You know, show up late, show up with an adult beverage in you, be unreliable. Gosh, we can work with that. I hire employees who have parole officers who regularly show up to the restaurants and say, hey, Grant, if Jorge shows up late today, let me know. He's going back to jail for the next year. I mean, like, that's a lot of weight on our shoulders to think about. But these are all like venial sins, tardiness. When you steal from the staff, when you take from other people, you've committed the mortal sin that, quite frankly, is going to be the end of your career in the service business, just in the same way that Pete Rose committed the mortal sin that ended what was a Hall of Fame career and prevented him from being in that Hall of Fame. And so if you've got a different opinion on this one, let me know. 520-790-2040 is our call-in line over here. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back after the action, we're going to talk about all kinds of things happening in the city of Tucson. I'm going to give you your food for thought and the four things you need to know while you start up your day. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to 1030 AM The Voice, your home for local news and talk. Welcome back to The Morning Voice. I'm your host, Grant Kruger. Always excited to be here with you on Wednesday morning, 7 to 9 a.m. on your morning commute. The top four things you need to know on your drive to work today. One, Governor Hobbs has vetoed 48 bills in just the last 48 hours or so, bringing her total up to 138 vetoes this year. Now, for those of you keeping track at home, and if you are keeping track at home, you are deep into political nerdery, and I absolutely want to hang out with you. 138 vetoes puts us five shy of Arizona's all-time record.
And who set the all-time record, Grant?
That would be Governor Hobbs set it herself last in her year. First term, actually, in 2023. She had less vetoes last year. She didn't break that record.
2 years. Two sessions.
So this is 2 years ago, but yes, she is on pace to absolutely shatter that record. As the Pete Rose of vetoes in the state of Arizona, Governor Hobbs could easily shatter 160 or 165 vetoes.
Charlene Hustle. Yeah,
quite frankly, it's May 14th, and the legislative session is likely to continue into early July. I happen to have the good fortune of having a lunch yesterday with current Senate President Warren Peterson and President Pro Temp T.J. Shoup, and they said it's very likely, given the budget discussions and the contemptuous nature of that, like how long this is going to drag out, that early July is absolutely a possibility. And as such, we're going to see more and more vetoes popping up. Now, a few of these bills going through are probably clickbait or veto bait, as you might say, in some capacity. I wasn't too particularly worried about whether our school systems would call the Gulf of Mexico the Gulf of America and things of this nature. They were asking to be vetoed. But there were some other ones that I think were a bit interesting when it comes to the hospitality industry, right? When we had a Matt Gress bill that talked about advising hotel guests if the hotel was going to be used by governments to, you know, house homeless folks in some capacity, like that might actually be information that you do kind of want to know before you say, oh, have your wife and kids stay at a staycation in some capacity when the room right next door to you is some sort of, you know, opioid clinic in some capacity. Like, I do think that there's some interest in that. And, you know, there was some reasonability in some of those that happened to be part of these 48 vetoes. This ultimately affects all of us because it creates what we saw on that ballot last year when there were 13 ballot referrals, right? One of the reasons that there were 13 ballot referrals, why your ballot was so long, is that there's an attempt from the legislative branch of the government to avoid the gubernatorial veto. 11 of those 13 were referrals as opposed to citizens' initiative because they know just about anything that's passed by this Republican majority, and we happen to have a majority in both the House and Senate in the state of Arizona, that any of these bills are subject to veto. And when we hit 138 year to date, it's looking like this is going to continue in the near future. It is absolutely high veto season right now in Arizona, and that is unfortunate. Now, speaking of, you know, drugs and hotel use over here and all those concerns, the Pima County Health Department put out a statement this week talking about carfentanil and that they have found their first cases of carfentanil pills, a similar-looking pill to the blue M30 oxycodone pill that has permeated its way through society and touches just about everybody in some capacity. We've lost 3 employees over the last 4 or 5 years in just union hospitality group alone to drug overdoses, something that we tend not to talk about very much, right? In the same way, news stories of suicide suddenly, you know, get tight-lipped about the whereabouts of the missing person out of respect for the families, and it's very understandable. But overdoses are sort of treated in the same way, and if we don't bring this up every once in a while, we're doomed to repeat the past. And so Carfentanil has now made its way to the Pima County streets. We're talking about a synthetic opioid that could be up to 10,000 times more powerful than what's normally out there on the streets. We've already had the Pima County Health Department asking us now for a number of years if we wish to distribute Narcan in our restaurants and bars. And that, to me, is just an unbelievable ask. Not that we wouldn't want to be helpful and figure out some way to help save a life. But could you imagine just the front door of one of our restaurants where these 17 and 18-year-old hostesses work the floor, and suddenly a van pulls up and throws out somebody on the front door that's overdosing, and you would expect that our staff, some of the least trained members of our staff, to suddenly be the experts in admitting, giving a dose of Narcan to somebody that was overdosing. It's a pretty terrifying thought to think that that's where we are in society today, that that's just the norm, that that's just what we're prepared to do to handle this fentanyl crisis in some capacity. And so this is definitely something to keep your eyes on out there. Not that anyone was going to advocate for casual fentanyl use in some capacity, but gosh, the world just continues to get more and more dangerous. I don't think, Matt, drugs are like they were when we were kids back in the day.
No, it's not.
It's
sadly
kind of a terrifying world out there.
It is.
Well.
And so, and then, you know, you have liability issues, you know, and I don't know if they're going to waive, going to invoke Good Samaritan laws, you know, but for you and your staff, you have to worry about, well, is there a liability issue if it's improperly administered or something like this?
Of course, these are concerns. I mean, we even have concerns about that in spite of the Good Samaritan laws for AEDs and other very helpful devices.
Sure.
I can't even imagine what it would be like for Narcan administration. And of course, when you're giving someone the Heimlich maneuver or you're using an AED, you're saving their life.
Yes.
They're probably coming out of that experience being like, hey, thank you for saving my life.
Yeah.
Where a fentanyl overdose person is actually like, hey, you know, I'm actually very upset with you and I'm ready to come to fisticuffs because you've ruined my high.
To your point, and I don't have any experience with using or administering Narcan, but what I have read is, because it stops the overdose condition, it also immediately throws the subject into withdrawal.
Yes.
Which can be violent, right?
Very much so.
Because now all of a sudden your body is not being affected in a way that you want it to be by the opiate or the synthetic opiate. But since you are an addict, you want more of it right now.
Without a doubt.
So good news, bad news. Yeah.
It's all terrifying stuff. And you see it on the streets every single day. I've had a homeless man on fentanyl at the corner of River and Campbell at that bus stop, right in front of the Cambrick Business Center now for about 2 months. There was a man just as I was driving down Campbell today in front of the Trader Joe's there waving a sword in the air.
Well,
like unbelievable.
Another,
like on the way to
another
work
sadly
this morning.
Evolving, wrong way evolving subject, large knife blades.
And so when you think of you know, problems with drug use, you know, you think often of the bus, and that's number three on our list over here. SunTran is having meetings this week to talk about reducing some of the bus routes they have to save some money. Now, obviously, saving some money in the SunTran world might start with charging for your goods and services. I was looking up some statistics that were posted on Tucson Sentinel today, and they're saying that bus ridership is up 23% since February 2020, the last time they charged. And it kind of stuck with me to think that when you were charging, the ridership was X, and when you're not charging, the ridership is only X times 1.23. It's 23% higher. I can't imagine in my restaurants if I was charging, right, and my sales were X, and if suddenly there was, let's call it like free whiskey day, like my sales would be 5X, or not sales, but my consumption, let's say, would be 5X or 10X in some capacity. It's very interesting to me to denote that the ridership is only up 23%.
Kind of pokes a hole in the argument that it's needed.
Right. You just can't see that ridership going up that much. Like if it free only made it 23% more bodies, but it actually created all the problems for the people that were taking the bus to school, for the people that were taking the bus to their job. Do you want to see man swinging sword, you know, right in front of your bus stop? Or these days, I guess that's hatchets, or of course are the weapon of choice in the city of Tucson as well. Too respectfully, of course, to the victims of the recent hatchet attack. attacks. Like 23% isn't worth having the problems that we're having over here.
Right. So you get into this is a great point you make, because you get into the comparative benefit versus the comparative bad things that are happening.
Correct.
And do that math, do that equation. And I think the greater than sign flips the other way.
Right. And the SunTran disability transit buses that moved to free are now only up 5%, not even 23%.
So on beck and call, you're only getting a 5% bump in
correct.
Consumption.
The one big uptick I can say on this one was the Sunlink streetcar was up 96%. But you know what that is, having ridden that Sunlink streetcar? That's drunk college kids traveling between university and downtown in some capacity. I've been on that Sunlink streetcar. I've seen that one. And I'm not saying that doesn't help in some degree in economic development to move people around to the various restaurants and bars we have downtown. But that can't be the driver for all of this. Like, that just can't possibly be the choice. Well, we're going to take a quick break for some great advertisers coming up over here. When we come back, I'm going to get to number four. There's a little thing called the Rito Racetrack we're going to talk about after the break when we come back. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to The Morning Voice on 10:30 a.m. Your home for local news and talk. Welcome back to The Morning Voice. Every weekday, 7 to 9 a.m., we're bringing you local Tucson content. On Mondays, we've got Lydia Aranda. On Tuesdays, Ted Maxwell from the Southern Arizona Leadership Council and his engagement hour. On Wednesdays, you get me, the intersection of restaurant politics and other neat things happening over here in the Old Pueblo. On Thursdays, Tom Moulton from the Southern Arizona Attractions Alliance. And on Fridays, Dr. Ed Ackerley, bringing you all kinds of neat things from the University of Arizona.
And if I can jump in for a minute, a little preview for Friday, Dr. Ackerley is going to have Bishop Kikanis on as his guest during the 7 o'clock hour.
No way. Super and, cool. They'll probably talk about that new pope a little
the
bit.
The bishop
here, huh?
Knows the pope from his dealings and bishopings and things like this. And so I'm sure maybe we'll get some insight on the new pope. So that's a big deal. And then also hit that like. Go to The Morning Voice on Facebook and hit that like button and keep up to date on what's going on with The Morning Voice. We got a page for the show.
I love The Morning Voice. Check that one out on the Facebook over there, keeping that Meta algorithm going. Hey, I was pretty excited about the new pope thing. There were so many funny memes about this one, right?
Oh, yeah.
You know, making the papacy great again, Trump tariffs working and bringing in an American pope. Like, so many good funny things over there. One thing that wasn't too funny on the top of the news, though, over the last couple of days was the Rito racetrack. If one thing that you know is... as a listener, is that particular property is near and dear to my heart, right? Happens to be located at First and River, just
physically
down the street.
Near and dear.
Yeah, literally physically near. Yeah. But also, we've worked really hard over the years to try to turn that into a community event center as well, too, with both the first few Dusk Music Festivals, the concerts that have been done with the Conquistadors, and, of course, horse racing, right? The Rito Downs was the birthplace of quarter horse racing in the United States. For those that don't know, quarter horses is sort of the horse drag racing. That's the straight line, like the big, powerful muscle cars of horses. And the thoroughbreds are the big oval track. Now, there's some challenges to the Rito Downs because the track, by its nature, isn't quite as long as modern thoroughbred standards would be. So it kind of makes it a B-rate track to a certain degree to the horsemen because of that. But nonetheless, it's got a lot of cool history. And when racing happens in Tucson, anytime from late January to early April is more or less the season when the weather is nice on the weekends, it could draw between 3,500 and 5,500 people every single weekend day. It's a pretty neat experience. And I have to tell you, Matt, like, this is one of like the true like cultural melting pots of Tucson. Like, I like to think that our restaurants in St. Phillips Plaza, Union's pretty all-inclusive and it's got a little cross-section of all of society, but when you go to that racetrack, it is literally a bit of everything, right? Everything from Susie Sorority to Sonoran Vaquero and old Tucson horse
ranch
people.
Folks, yeah, absolutely.
All
it's
of the
total
above.
Mix.
Everything. It's really, really neat and such a great experience. And it really breaks my heart that the news this week, a memo came out from Jan Lesher that there were zero applicants for the 2026 season. The county had put out a request, to apply for this one. There was a mandatory walkthrough of the property to do that. I actually attended that walkthrough just to see who would be interested in doing this and see if they were willing to do it. I'd be out there just willing to help and try to figure out a way to make the Rito happen in subsequent years. However, the county had a lot of restrictive rules on this one, and I think that's the genesis behind why there wasn't an applicant. First and foremost...
Yeah, tell me you don't want horse racing at Rito Park without telling me you don't want horse racing at Rito Park.
Now verbally, yeah. County Administrator Lesher has said she's committed to horse racing returning. And the applicant dates for this RFP, the deadline was April 26. Because there was no applicants, they punted, moved that for a whole nother week, and still got no applicants. Mm. And I'm here this morning to tell you why. Ultimately, there's a number of challenges in horse racing as an industry up front. Right, you've got the reduction of just racetracks across the country. You've got gambling that, as we discussed at the top of the hour, gambling isn't now just limited to OTBs and horse racing insight. You can now bet on your phone on both horse racing, on NFL games. There are prop bets, player bets, and every single day, my patrons around our restaurants are comparing notes on their phone around the bar, talking about the success or failure of their five-team parlays or whatever they're going for that particular day. So gambling, as we know it, has really permeated society in a way that I don't have to have Fast Eddie the bookie anymore, right? I've just got my iPhone and I am good to go. So first and foremost, the OTB network, which helps support horse racing, has really been kind of shrinking because the OTB network is actually hamstrung by having to have a live teller. The rules, the antiquated state rules, and if you go to like the Midtown Tavern, right, that's at First and I want to say Prince, it is on the northeast corner, right? They've got like an OTB network that's associated with the horse track in Phoenix called Turf Paradise. You can bet at Midtown, but they have to have a live teller there to actually pay you out in cash. Now, it's one of the neat parts about it. You get paid in cash as opposed to credits on your phone. And as you can imagine, bars and restaurants much prefer people getting paid in cash because guy that wins $1,000 in cash and gets handed to it, what's that guy doing, Matt?
He's happy. Yeah, he's going to spend it.
Yeah, he's buying a round of drinks or two, right? So we've always enjoyed that symbiotic relationship with gambling winners and, of course, the additional spend that might happen in the alcohol world. And so the OTB networks are hamstrung because in today's world, everybody can bet from their phone. There isn't a need for employees. But when you have to pay somebody to sit out there on the OTB network, the kind of employee that has to pass a fingerprint, you know, security clearance card, sort of like a blackjack dealer or something along those lines, you're limiting the number of employees that can even qualify for that kind of job. And then you're paying somebody 16, 18, 20 bucks an hour to hang out over there, taking away all the profit. And so the OTB laws have to get out of the stone ages for horse racing and the OTB model to continue to work. The live teller model is going to absolutely have to go away because there's just no way the industry can afford that particular labor cost. As well, the Rito has always been somewhat dependent on Turf Paradise up in Phoenix and whether they would run or not. Can you get enough horses in the state
of
Arizona?
Right.
Right. They're the big dog, the 900, 800-pound gorilla. They control over 90% of the racing days in the
state. Wasn't there also a factor in the law that had to do with Turf Paradise had to be running, or they had to authorize certain OTB locations, or they had to authorize Rito to
yes, it, ultimately, to exist as an OTB, it has to be tied to an operating racetrack.
Yeah, yeah.
And there were only three in the state of Arizona that were operating regularly. It was Turf Paradise in Phoenix. There was Arizona Downs in Prescott that used to be known as Yavapai Downs. And, of course, our favorite hometown hero over here, the Rito Downs. Now, we were excited as Turf Paradise had announced a couple of years ago that they might be selling. And suddenly the association with those OTB networks could have all gone to the Rito and made the Rito have a little bit more of a chance to be profitable. At the end of the day, as somebody that operates food and beverage businesses, I can assure you that there's not a lot of profit. Even in getting 3,500 to 5,500 people, there's not a lot of money to be made in that food service at the Rito for just a few weekends of the year. The problem is you don't do it enough to be good at it. You're not efficient. Just about the time you've figured it out and got your menu down and the waitresses have some reps and the
bartenders. And what's popular this season?
Right?
Right?
Yeah, you don't know until just about the season's over, and then it's like Groundhog's Day. You've got to start all over again. So the county only offered a 3-year deal to any operator. There was $500,000 to help sweeten the pot, and that sounds like a lot of money, right? And I'm certainly not discounting $500,000, but in a track, that big and a facility that old, that thing would suck up $500,000 in about 0.2 seconds and the customers wouldn't even feel it yet. And so who's going to invest potentially millions of dollars into fixing up the old building when you can only stay there for 3 years? Right? Like, you need a much longer term deal if you're going to make that sort of capital investment. It's that risk reward relationship, that same real estate like level of transaction I talk about with restaurants all the time. When you're leasing, you've got to monetize that huge tenant improvement over the economic life of the business. Otherwise, it just doesn't pencil out. And so the terms that the county were offering, a 3-year deal and no amplified live music outside, were essentially a detriment to the RITO operating and continuing. And as such, there was absolutely zero operators who have submitted their applications for this. And it's looking like we're going to have a whole nother season without horse racing in the RITO now. And quite frankly, the future of horse racing is in jeopardy over here, with Turf Paradise looking at potentially selling as well too, right? The highest and best use of the value of that very large tract of real estate in Phoenix just may not be a horse track anymore.
Well, I have heard some talk that possibly there might be a push to do something up in Marana. I don't know what you know about that, but I've heard that they're trying to get something going over there.
There's a couple different models for the future of horse racing over here. Marana and the possibility of building an all-new facility is one. Then the other one might be in some way, shape, or form to move the racing to a new site adjacent to the Pima County Fairgrounds. Perhaps mm-hmm. that same model that the county uses for the fair might be better than the current model, where the track and that facility is managed by the Parks and Natural Resources mm-hmm. Department as well, mm-hmm. too. It might make more sense to have the fair operators who do that same sort of F&B thing, erect a setup for a week or two and then tear it all mm-hmm. down and do it again next year. But either way, it's looking like the RITO Downs is going to be shuttered for the next calendar year without horse racing. And to me, that's a really, really sad thing for the city of Tucson and for Pima County. We're going to break down other restaurant news for you when we come back after the break. Janet Wittenbrecker coming up at the top of the hour to talk about her race for City Council Ward 3. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to The Morning Voice.
Hey, do you want to keep up with what's going on in the here at 1030 The Voice? You can go to 1030 The Voice. We've got a Facebook page. Hit that like button, and you get upcoming show guest lineups for all of our local live shows and news on upcoming events. Again, on Facebook, go to 1030 The Voice and hit the like button and keep in touch with us.
Welcome back to The Morning Voice. It sure is nice out there right now. This is absolutely the highest of the high season for Tucson and our culinary delightful restaurants over here that make up America's best Mexican food. And Tucson made national news this week on a list of America's 38 largest cities and the most diverse restaurants in the United States. Now, we made number 28 on that list. Phoenix was listed as 31, so it's kind of nice to beat those guys up there. We don't get to beat them on too many different things. And this was the Escoffier School of Culinary Arts. For those that don't know who Auguste Escoffier was, he was a very famous French chef in the 1800s who helped develop the five mother sauces, right? These are like French cooking basically starts with the base of bechamel, espagnol, tomato sauce, velouté, and hollandaise.
CJ Ham was a big fan of the velouté.
Right,
yeah,
yes.
We spoke about that often.
Everyone's got their favorite mother sauce in some capacity, right? Mine happens to be tomato for those keeping score at home. But they came up with this list of the most diverse restaurants, you know, diverse cities for restaurants, and Tucson was number 28. Coming in absolutely last on that list was my hometown, Detroit, Michigan, where 68% of all restaurants in Detroit were listed as having menus that were American in quotation marks, giving absolutely zero diversity of food in the Midwest over there. Cheese curds are, in fact, very diverse. Escoffier, we're going to talk about that
garlic
one over
and
here.
White and orange and
what could possibly be not diverse about a fish fry on Friday? I have absolutely no idea. But we made 28 on that list over here, probably due to the broad range of Mexican restaurants that we have in the Old Pueblo. Now, when we think about restaurants here in the Old Pueblo, this time of year, we start to unfortunately have to talk about closings, right? If it bleeds, it leads in the news cycle over here. And as we get to the end of restaurant season, we're going to unfortunately talk about a lot of closings over the next few weeks. And I do so respectfully. as an operator, as somebody who knows what it's like to have your life savings on the line, right? To have potentially your kid's future mortgage or personal guarantee tied up into these properties, but nonetheless, to announce what's happening in the Tucson restaurant scene over here. Tommy D's on the east side in 22nd has announced their closing after nearly four decades in business. They happen to be located on 22nd, and it's really sad to hear about that one going out this weekend. I think they've already closed. On 4th Avenue, Better Bev's, 210 North 4th Avenue, right next to where Hermano's was, across the street from O'Malley's and that giant student housing that's used to be Maloney's over there in that same strip.
Yeah.
Isabella's Ice Cream used to be in that same little stretch right there. There was a business that opened up about 2 years ago called Better Bev's, and it was a beverage-only business. And I was looking up their hours and researching these guys on Instagram, and they were closed a Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and just opened up on the weekends, which I think is a tough model, too. It's hard to pay that rent when you've got 3 days of sales versus seven in some capacity. And Better Bev's has announced that they're going back to a food truck model, a mobile model, as opposed to a brick and mortar, and that's happening this week. And of course, what also made the news was the Bambi Bar getting shut down by the Pima County Health Department. The Bambi Bar, located on Speedway, has been a long staple of dive bars in Tucson. Zero windows, very divey, right?
It's the Potter Familias.
Yes, it met all the definitions that you thought of with a dive bar, but that property was purchased.
The Escoffier mother sauce of dive bars.
Yes, very, I think the five mother sauces of dive bar, though, are well vodka, well tequila, well rum, well gin, and well triple sec, right? I think those are probably your mother sauces over there. The Bambi Bar has been shut down in perpetuity by the Pima County Health Department because, quite frankly, it wasn't meeting their standards anymore. Larson Baker bought that property. And so the long-term plan is to put a drive-through on there. I wouldn't doubt that we see a Dutch Bros or something along those lines, quite frankly. And not shockingly, the operators weren't going to put any real money into the place when it's marked for death, when it's, you know, sort of a dead bar walking over here.
Cash and basis, it isn't business. And yeah,
it's just a matter of time before those sort of lack of reinvestments in the property draw the ire of the health department at one of their inspections. And so they were hoping to kind of ride out this property purchase a little longer for Larson Baker to work out the permittal process, as that can be a quite challenging thing here in the city of Tucson. And they didn't quite make it. The health department got wind that there was a number of things going on in the Bambi Bar that weren't even up to dive bar major standards. So we announced the closing of those three restaurants here in Tucson, a real heartbreaker. When we come back after the break, I'm going to give you some good news, though. We're going to talk about some restaurants that have opened up, and we're also going to have City Council candidate for Ward 3, Janet Wittenbraker, coming up after the break. Don't go anywhere. You're going to get to listen to Hour 2 of The Morning Voice with me on 10:30 a.m., your home for local news and talk. Welcome back to The Morning Voice for Hour 2. I am Grant Kruger. Hey, I'm going to bring you some positive news over here, because we were talking about restaurant closings at the end of the hour over there, but it's not all gloom and doom in the restaurant business. In fact, there's been three openings this week as well, too, in Tucson, which is pretty surprising to see, because you think opening on May 14th, like, you're literally getting to the absolute, like, end of season. I mean, you're opening up on day one of summer almost at this point, right? Like, no easy feat by any means. And so, to begin with, we've got the Scented Leaf Tea Room. They're located at 2627 East Broadway. That's in the Solot Plaza, the Sunshine Mile. We actually had Colby Quist from Quisty's Sandwiches on last week, also on that same plaza on the Sunshine Mile. And so it's pretty neat to see some of the Broadway development finally happening, right? It's only been, let's say, two decades or so since Broadway was getting redeveloped and widened and done. And we're just starting to see the fruits of that labor come to fruition for Southern Arizona. Now, you can't have that development on Broadway if it wasn't for Rio Nuevo. They've absolutely been a force in funding that sales tax creating businesses that happen to be there, which is why you end up with Rocco's, which is why you end up with the Broadway. It's why you've got Quisty's, and it's also why you've got Scented Leaf over there. Rio Nuevo's been in the crosshairs of society. All these last 2 weeks, I've talked about it, you know, with that deal with Borderlands and Playformance and of course Live Nations Club. And there were a lot of op-eds in the paper this week sort of chiding Rio Nuevo and saying what wrong they were doing. But quite frankly, Rio Nuevo's hands are tied here because they can only fund businesses that create sales tax. And how many retail businesses are out there right now? Who's building a dress store downtown? Who's building a camera shop, right? Businesses that generate sales tax are almost limited to just restaurants. And sometimes we end up with a mix that might be a little more restaurant-centric, a little heavier than the market would support. But also opening up this week on the east side, Sace Numero Cuatro, right? Sace Kitchen is opening up on Tanga Verde at the Plaza Shops, located right behind Sakura. Today is their opening
that
day.
That snuck in there. So are they where Millie's used to be?
Yes, I believe
Millie's
so.
Millie's went across the street to where Dakota
that,
used to
yes,
be.
Yes, they're in that plaza over there. I've yet to set foot in that. I will go visit them this week. I'm going to be on that side of town a little later today for check out the Maverick and make sure they're doing well over there. But it's just down the street. I'm certainly a big fan of everybody being part of making Tanga Verde great again. And, you know, Sakura will eventually be a big part of that, but just more things opening up in the plaza shops. I wish Jake and Erica Munoz a tremendous amount of success in Seis Numero Cuatro. Eventually, they will hit their manifest destiny and have six Seises. And I think at that point, you know, the universe will line up correctly for them and everything will work out.
And so that plaza used to be... There used to be, I don't know if you were here then, there used to be, it was Windy City and might have been San Fran Bar and Grill just to go over in the other corner of that plaza. So that plaza does have quite a fun history.
Without a doubt. And I'm just happy to see some development in the city of Tucson and on Tanga Verde helping make Restaurant Row the amazing place that it used to be a few decades ago as well too. And then one more opening, there's a family entertainment center on South 4th Avenue that opened up last week called Bada Bing Bada Boom. No, this is not The Sopranos over here. You know, immediately you can get a connotation with that name, but this is actually a family-themed restaurant and arcade, burgers, tacos, pizzas. There's statues of superheroes and whatnot over there, and they're located on South 4th Avenue. They opened up the first week of May as well, too, and so we wish Bada Bing Bada Boom a tremendous amount of success as well, too. We're happy to have any sort of economic development happening in Tucson at all. And so to speak of economic development in the city over here, we are joined live right now in the KVOI studios by Miss Janet Wittenbraker, candidate for City Council Ward 3 in Tucson. Welcome, Janet.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me.
Hey, thanks so much for joining us on The Morning Voice. I've had the pleasure of getting to speak to you before on our previous show, right? And so we're really excited to have you on this format over here.
Well, I'm excited to be here. I'm excited to hear about all of the restaurants opening up here in Tucson. To your point, that sales tax comes right back to us here in Tucson. And we should hope that the mayor and council use it wisely and encourage more economic development. The challenge is it's hard to attract businesses to our community when we have failing roads, we have a crime problem, not just any crime, a violent crime problem, and we have a homelessness epidemic. And so our economic development seems to be primarily the hospitality industry. And that's great. We have wonderful winters here, and we bring our lovely snowbirds. As much as we're happy to see them leave, we do like them coming to our town, and our college students, and as well as tourists. I'd say let's take some of those tax dollars and let's invest in our community, and wisely and prudently, and focus on those three top issues, and then industry will come to us.
Sure. I think that's a wise way of looking at it, right? Like, you've got to fix up Tucson first before we attract them, right? I've always wondered what it would be like if I was a major company deciding about whether I wanted to do business here in Tucson, and I were to land at the Tucson airport, and you were to drive me from just the Tucson airport to, let's even say, downtown or 4th Avenue or Speedway or Grant. Like, what would that look like on my commute?
Right. Right. And, you know, when I think about our summers here in Tucson, yes, our winters are wonderful. our summers are hot. I would argue that our monsoons are wonderful. But I've traveled to areas where the climate wasn't ideal, for example, Minnesota in the winter, but because I wanted to go there, because I wanted to enjoy Minnesota and what happened to be the football team, the Vikings, but nonetheless, you know, I went ahead and I said, okay, I'll wear a heavier coat. We're not attracting, again, those sales tax dollars, those tourists in the summer, not just because it's hot, but they're deterred with dealing with the heat because of all those other issues I already mentioned.
Of course, it's incredibly challenging to be a small business in Southern Arizona, and even more so in the city of Tucson. We've got a higher minimum wage, right? There's a differential minimum wage for those keeping score at home. It's $14.70 in the state of Arizona, $15 in Tucson. And for servers, right, a wage I talk about an awful lot in the restaurant industry, as you can imagine, it's $12 an hour in the city of Tucson compared to $11.70 for the rest of the state. Now, that doesn't seem like much. You go 30 cents an hour, Grant, you're so cheap. Why are you worried about that? But when you have, you know, hundreds of thousands of server hours, like this adds up pretty quickly.
Multiply that out.
Right. Yeah. And it creates a less competitive environment for the city of Tucson compared to our neighbors in unincorporated Pima County or in, say, Marana or Oro Valley or Vail.
Correct. And I also believe it's resigning ourselves to we're only going to have minimum wage jobs in Tucson. We're going to have a low education rate here in Tucson. It's essentially giving up. We're going to keep you in your menial job. Not that I'm going to take that back right now because that sounded horrible. But what I mean by menial, your low income job, because those low income jobs are very important. We're going to keep you there and not motivate change, not motivate growth. We see much of that in the city of Tucson. Many of their employees in the city of Tucson are making that minimum wage with very few opportunities to advance up through the organization. I know that. I was previously an employee of the city of Tucson. I happened to have been employed by the city manager's office, so I had a higher wage. But you see it all the way down with this idea of you're unionized, you have a pension. But what good is a pension if you're only making minimum wage? I think, and I know I digressed a little bit there, but we need to build up our community and give people real opportunities for success. And that includes our restaurant owners and our wait staff and those people making minimum wage.
Certainly. And we've got to figure out a way, too, to create some more retail in some capacity. There's got to be some creative solutions to make this one happen, particularly when we're so dependent on Rio Nuevo to help fund our downtown area, to help fund our Sunshine Mile. How can you create something that makes sales tax that's not a restaurant or nightclub? I love the restaurant business and I'm all for it, but we need to have some other options in the city as well, too, if we're going to be economically viable in some capacity.
Correct. And the city of Tucson has a limit on big box buildings. Walmart is one of our highest sales tax revenues in industries here in Tucson. And yet they had to get a waiver in order to expand their location on First and Whitmore.
A lot of challenges with that sort of stuff, and a big amount of challenges. And that adds to the perception that Tucson is in some way, shape, or form business unfriendly. Let's take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to ask Janet about how she can help make Tucson a little more business friendly. She's running for Ward 3 over here, and she's got some ideas about how to make Southern Arizona a better place. We're going to come back to that after the break.
You want to keep up with what's going on at 1030 The Voice? Follow us on Facebook. Hit that like button. Again, 1030 The Voice. You get upcoming show guest lineups and news on events like the Morning Voice Eat and Greet, Meet and Greet coming up next week. And it's all right there on 1030 The Voice on Facebook. Give us a follow and stay in the know. Grant will be right back.
Welcome back to The Morning Voice. I am your host, Grant Kruger, and we are joined live again in the KVUI studios by Janet J.L. Wittenbraker, candidate for City of Tucson, Ward 3. Welcome back, Janet.
Well, thank you.
Hey, so I know who you are. You've been a force in local politics for the last few years here in Tucson and a very, very active participant in both mayoral and in Pima County supervisor races. But why don't we break down a little bit about your background for our listeners over here, for those that don't know JL?
Okay. Well, first of all, let me start off with my website, which is janet4tucson.com. It's JANETFORTucson.com. It's there. You can find out a lot about me as well as my platform. But to keep it, short for this radio audience, I will say I am a 30-plus year professional. I'm a senior contracts administrator for a Fortune 500 company. I have a master's degree in legal studies from Sandra Day O'Connor College of Law. As I said previously, I was formerly employed by the city manager's office, and it was there that I learned how deeply impacted we are by our local government. But I didn't do anything with that knowledge. When I left the city manager's office, it was for employment with Raytheon Missile Systems. And I drove around in my bubble. And it wasn't until 2020 when I started to see how, I had already realized that, right? That's the shame on me moment. I knew our local government had a huge impact on us. But in 2020, we saw a mayor and council that actually imposed more restrictive precautions on people over the whole COVID.
We were the recipients of that in the restaurant business too, I assure you.
Exactly. They tried to enforce a mask mandate beyond what Governor Ducey had done. They tried to implement a curfew, and it was only because people resisted. And I thought to myself, this has got to stop. This has got to stop. And so in 2023, I marched myself down to the Pima County GOP, and I said, who's your candidate for mayor? I have the resources. I have the time. I want to support a candidate. Well, they didn't have a candidate. And I thought, well, if not me, who? And that was 3 weeks out from the election.
They did not only not have a candidate in 2023, they didn't have a candidate in 2019 either.
Correct. And, you know, when we don't run a candidate, we not only tell moderate, common sense thinkers that, okay, they won, we tell them we quit. That's not gonna work. That doesn't work for me, and so I went with it, and I ran hard. That race was Regina Romero was declared the winner. However, and it was a full ballot. There was an independent, there was a Libertarian, Democrat, and then myself, the Republican. Regina Romero only won that by less than 28%. Now, think about this, Tucson. Only 24% of registered voters in the city of Tucson actually voted in that election. The outcome could have been much different had you simply returned your ballot. Then I ran for Board of Supervisors for Pima County.
Just in the last year, right?
Just in the last year, at the behest of Sharon Bronson. She had stepped down, and also my supporters in the party. And that race was declared for Jen Allen, however, only by less than 11%.
Right. You got 39,888 votes in that particular race. It looks like 43.1%. And so, like, that's pretty close. That's way closer than the voter registration on Republican or Democrat voter registration. So you made some inroads on that one.
And I think there's a shift. There is a shift in thinking. And we saw that with 414, right? People don't mind paying an additional sales tax when they believed it's going for the greater good. We see now, we see a mayor and council who have essentially doubled their budget over 4 years from $1.4 billion to $2.3 billion, and yet still can't afford the basic needs. They cannot ensure our safety, our roads. And again, it goes back to those basic needs. What do we need? We just want to feel safe in our community. So back to the council seat. So I thought, all right, God has a different plan for me. Why don't I beat that example? Why don't I find those candidates and get them to run? And as hard as I tried, I could not get someone to run for Ward 3. And I just have to say it again, quitting is not for me. And I wasn't willing to turn the city over unopposed. And I'll tell you, and to go back to 414, there was a push for that money would be spent on public safety. But the way the proposition was written, and for your regular listening audience, I'm sure they know, but the way it was written is, well, we could shift money around, which would include climate initiatives and stuff. And
it was essentially a slush fund if they wanted it to be.
Exactly. And I think people have said, enough. I'm not going to pay any more into something I'm already paying for, and I'm seeing no results. And I liken it to taking a bucket that has 1,000 holes in the bottom of it and trying to fill a bathtub. The city of Tucson budget has grown so big with so many different pet projects that there's not enough money to really tackle issues. And my ideas as a council member, and I do, when we, well, I'm going to give you a quick civic lesson for you folks. The city of Tucson primary election is ward only. The general election is citywide. That means that you can vote for wards 3, 5, and 6.
Correct. Every city resident gets to vote in all 6 wards, essentially, which is kind of an interesting and unique election system.
And it's been allowed to continue forward because we are a charter city. The state has tried to get rid of this. It's an unfair process, but I think we can take advantage of it. We need every single voter to vote. Now, some of you might be, well, what's the big deal with council? Why does it matter? You got a mayor. Well, so you're informed. We are a council manager government, form of government. That means that the council actually consists of 7 council members. 1 is the mayor.
Correct.
And 6 wards. They have an equal vote. The mayor does not have veto authority. She does not have the authority to overrule. So you need good common sense council members on that board so they can create that balance, that diversity of thought, and also create conversation. There are issues that need to be discussed with the public so we can take policy action, and then it's the manager's job to make sure it's happening.
Without a doubt. And I think most people really don't understand that setup for our civic government in the city of Tucson, both the ward-only election thing and the fact that the mayor is truly just another member of the city council as far as votes go, that there's not like some supreme veto process that she's got.
And that was only just recently. It used to be the mayor was only a tiebreaker. We passed that via a ballot initiative, and I think it was 2013.
With all Democrats on the board, there's 98% of these votes in the city council are unanimous either way, and there's certainly not a lot of diversity of thought. But let's take a quick break, Janet. We've got J.L. Wittenbraker live in studios over here, candidate for Ward 3, City of Tucson. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to Grant Krueger on The Morning Voice, 10:30 a.m., your home for local news and talk. Welcome back to The Morning Voice. I'm your host, Grant Krueger. Every Wednesday, you get me 7 to 9 a.m. time. We're talking all things local, Tucson politics and hospitality. I love the fact that we get to do this on KVOI. There's so few opportunities to talk local, right? Everybody can bang on about national news. Everybody can get excited about the gubernatorial race. But where can we talk city council? Where can we talk the Pima County Board of Supervisors? Where can we talk the mayor race? Well, who better than sitting right across me right now than Janet J.L. Wittenbraker, who quite frankly has run for all these in her third race right now in 4 years, but has learned so much about the city of Tucson and Pima County and the things we need to do to improve as well. Welcome back, Janet.
Well, thank you so much. And yes, it's very true. And this is my third run, consecutive run, I would say. You know, I as I already said, I tried to find candidates. I couldn't find candidates. Look, I'm not a quitter. And I believe in my community. My commitment is to my community. It's not out of some desire to be an elected official. It's because I care about my neighbors. I care about my friends. I don't care what party affiliation you are. I don't care who you voted for president. I care that you're able to get to work safely. And safely, if it means, you know, free of any altercations or without hitting a pothole on the way to work. And that's why I'm involved. It's funny, during the break, Grant and I were talking about how I've evolved since my first election. I'll tell you, when I first ran for mayor, I was very nervous, a little bit timid. God forbid I asked anyone for money. If you're listening, I'm not afraid to ask for money anymore. I am enrolled in the City of Tucson matching funds, which means I need to secure 200 contributions between the values of $10 to $500 from city residents. So if you're tight and don't have a lot of margin in your budget, I ask for $10. You can reach me on my website at janet4tucson.com. But if you're flush, I'm asking for the full $500. Now, the City of Tucson has kind of jerry-rigged that, in that when I ran for supervisors, the state law applied. And the state law was you can get $6,700 per individual. The Tucson said, oh, well, in order to keep things fair, they always want to keep things fair without recognizing the consequences. You can only get a maximum of $500, $1,000 from a PAC, and there's no super PACs.
Right, so this is a pretty low budget in general then to work with for most candidates for this.
It is, and getting your name out there costs money, from everything from signs to radio ads to, you know, t-shirts, pins, whatever. All these things cost money, but you're limited as a candidate. So I need lots and lots and lots of $10 donations. I also need lots and lots and lots of $500 donations. So, but I promise you, Tucson, you have my word. And by the way, this goes out to county residents as well. They can contribute to my campaign, but also realize what is happening to you in the unincorporated areas. You just got taxed by the City of Tucson. They're going to increase your water rate.
Yeah, 17 to 23%. Yay.
Yay. Because they failed to pass 414. And rather than taking a hard look at their budget and deciding what is the absolute needs, they've decided they'll make up a new tax.
Without a doubt. There was a really great op-ed in yesterday's paper on that. Josh Jacobson from the Tucson Crime Free Coalition wrote up a real nice piece breaking down that one and how that truly is a tax against those that don't want to be annexed by the City of Tucson.
Right. So either get annexed or pay higher water bills. But the reality is they don't want to annex every area. They don't want to annex 3 points. It would cost the city far too much, right? They just want to tax you so they can continue to waste your money. And it's time to bring fiscal responsibility back to local government.
Without a doubt, Janet. But why do you think there aren't more candidates out there running for this? Because with a couple weeks left to go before signatures were due, it was looking like there was going to be nobody for Ward 5, which there actually isn't right now. It's a Democrat-only race, right? They're going to run unopposed. There was nobody for Ward 3, and there was one candidate, Jake Tolkoff, for Ward 6. On the Republican side, the bench was looking pretty empty until you stepped up over here to kind of take one for the team and run for the city. Why do you think that is?
Well, campaigns are hard. They're hard. And again, they're expensive. Many people have a full-time job. They can't afford the time. I happen to have a full-time job. I am blessed in that I work out on the East Coast. So I have a lot of flexibility in my schedule. And that allows me to go to the lunch meeting or the evening meeting or whatever. But people just don't realize it's the hardest message to get across, that it is your local government. It is, you know, in the last presidential administration. So I've always said your local government has a greater impact on you than who's sitting in the White House.
Without a doubt. I agree 100%.
But we saw with the last administration and open borders that we were impacted here in Tucson, especially with the amount of fentanyl coming into our community and the open borders and the crime. But I thought, well, maybe I have to backtrack on saying that, because the last administration definitely had an impact on our lives. But then I unpacked it and it's like, wait a minute. It was your mayor and council and your board of supervisors who facilitated it. And had you had a strong and common sense, moderate city council, and same with the board of supervisors, one great board of supervisors, Steve Christie excluded. But beyond that, you have people that just lockstep with what doesn't work, what was actually goes against the, you know, what our laws are to do.
Well, of course, as I said last week, Andres Cano, who's now a Pima County supervisor, only weeks ago had worked for the city. And so not to say that that's 100% a conflict of interest, but it's certainly something to raise your eyebrows about when you suddenly see this collusion and you see that differential water rates go in a 3-2 vote like that, the deciding vote from the former city employee suddenly infiltrating the Board of Supervisors. It is something to think about.
Oh, yes. Most nepotism at best, I would say. You know, they raise their young candidates, their young Democrats, and then they just put them in these spots. Look, I know there's moderate Democrats out there, but unfortunately, we don't have any serving in our local government. I ran against, well, I didn't run against, and when I ran for a Board of Supervisors, there was a moderate candidate, Edgar Soto, someone who I'm very fond of, and I would have been honored to oppose him in that race. But he did not win, because we have the people who come out and vote are the soldiers.
Well, primaries are always tough, right? And that was sort of the argument about the ballot proposition last year statewide that tried to change around our primary system, was that primaries drive the far right and the far left. And so you end up with candidates that are built to win primaries but lose in generals, right? It's why we end up with candidates on the far ends sometimes of the political spectrum. And I've always hypothesized that the Democrat Party has done a better job of not challenging and eating their own in primaries as well, too. They've always created a much clearer path for who the anointed or appointed might be. And you look at, say, the congressional race in CD7, where very quickly Adrian Fontes, our Secretary of State, stood down, where Mayor Romero stood down and just cleared a path for Adelita to potentially win that particular race. Like, there wasn't a lot of opposition. They lined up quickly, where in our case, we tend to end up with very divisive you know, split races. You feel like what's happening on the gubernatorial side, right, with Andy Biggs and Karen Taylor Robeson, and we've got both sides of the Republican Party eating themselves up. But you're fortunate in this race, right? There is the primary is August 5th. I assume as long as you vote for yourself, we're good with that one. And that's going to take you to the November 4th election, correct?
Correct. And I guess in that regard, I'm blessed that I'm the only candidate. But I, you know, if you're interested in running for office, I welcome challengers. We need more involvement. You're 100% on how the Republican Party picks a side in the primary and doesn't rebound from that. I've seen it time and time again. Folks, if you want to change your government, you got to just walk in the middle, let the primary do what it's going to do, and then support your candidates. We're not going to agree on everything. I promise you. We just will not. But if you have open-minded people willing to have the conversation, their ideas can change. And I'll tell you, since my candidacy, some of my ideas have changed because I've met with people and I've heard what their number one concern is. And we've talked through it. And that's what we need to do in our party. And we need to get with the program. We do need to emulate what the Democrats do. And we need to support one another.
Without a doubt. Well, it takes a lot of lower intestinal fortitude to stand out there and run for office, right? And have arrows thrown at you from all sides of the equation. Let's take a quick break over here. And when we come back, we've got one more segment with Janet J.L. Wittenbraker, candidate for the City of Tucson, Ward 3 City Council. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to The Morning Voice. Welcome back to The Morning Voice. We've got one final segment for you this morning, this wonderful Wednesday morning, with Janet J.L. Wittenbraker, candidate for City Council, Ward 3. Welcome back, Janet.
Thank you.
Hey, so before the break, we were talking about the difficultness of finding candidates to get out there and run and why it's so important to participate civically. And I believe we've got a caller over here as well, too. Mr. Charles Heller is on the line. Mr. Heller, are you there, sir?
Yes. Janet, it's good to talk to you. And if you are elected on the city council, you're going to have to swear an oath to uphold the Constitution and laws of both the United States and the state of Arizona. And I'd like you to, but you know, the oath it's not very effective if people don't know what it is. So what is the stated purpose of government according to Arizona's Constitution, according to your knowledge of it?
Well, do you want it verbatim, or shall I just
doesn't matter. I'm not asking you to jump through a flaming hoop. I just want to know that you understand what the essence of the stated purpose of government is.
Well, generally, and I think this is very important for the listening audience to understand, that the political power is inherent to the people. It is your government to govern at the extent of at the consent of the people. And I feel that, and it was funny, on the way to the station, I was chatting on the phone, and I feel like there's sort of this apathy building again. The presidential race is over, so we go on to our daily lives. Well, here in Tucson, we have an election every year, not to mention the special elections they throw in there. And I feel like that apathy is because people are waiting for their government to tell them what to do and what they can and cannot do. But remember, per our state constitution, it is your power, you, the people, who dictate how your government functions. You dictate the policies. And it drove me crazy when I go to the Board of Supervisors and Adelita Grijalva would refer to it as the call to the audience. No, it's the call to the public. And it's your voice that's so important. You're constitutionally protected in that regard. And we need more people coming to the mayor and council meetings and speaking up and saying enough is enough. Now, I will say I'm just as guilty as everyone else. To drive down there on a Tuesday night at 5 o'clock is crazy. But it really is for the people to run your government. And did I pass, Charles?
Yeah, and you did, because the main thing is the government doesn't realize that power is inherent in the people, but it is also the stated purpose that government protect the rights of the individual. And I'm shouting more to other people than to you, because I know you know it. But the point is that I don't think that the people in general realize that. And every state has got a stated purpose of government, as does the federal constitution. And I just wish people were more grounded in it.
And I would say, Charles, if you elect me, and by the way, I know you live in the city, and it's a citywide vote for the general election. If you elect me, I will demonstrate that, and I'll be the example for the next candidates coming up.
I love it. Thanks so much for calling in, Charles.
I'll be watching.
We appreciate you. We've got time for one quick other caller over here. We've got Paul on line three. Good morning, Paul.
Good morning. Thank you. I'm very curious about how this new Indian casino in town is going to affect our city income tax, and also people in the county that will stop buying cars and anything else in the city limits. How's that going to affect our sales taxes?
Well, you know, again, sales taxes, everything. You know, we also receive a state share. My bigger concern, Paul, is the loss of our hospitality industry. People do not want to travel to a community, whether it be, you know, how they spend their money, whether it be at the casinos or at our restaurants or hotels, but they don't want to come to a city. They don't want to take their vacation time and go to a place where we have high violent crime. We saw what just happened, Jacob Couch. God rest his soul, and may God bless his family. We saw just yesterday or the day before, I'm looking at Grant for that reminder, of a hatchet attack at a bus depot, a bus stop. That concerns me more than where our taxes are going to come from. What I'm more concerned is the taxes we lose, because we lose one of our biggest industries, which is the hospitality industry. And you're right. We keep raising sales tax. We keep raising property tax. People are going to stop wanting to pay those taxes, so they don't move here. They don't spend their money here. They go outside of the county. If I were elected, I would lower taxes.
Well, thank you, Paul, and thank you, Charles, and thank you, Janet, for coming to spend part of your Wednesday morning with us. That's Janet Witt. It's janet4tucson.com, correct?
Yes, janet4tucson.com.
And thank you, listeners, for spending part of your Wednesday morning with us on The Morning Voice. It's our pleasure to always bring you local Tucson content over here. It's been a fantastic Wednesday morning with you. Don't go anywhere. We've got Kathleen Wynn coming up after the break. It's been The Morning Voice on 10:30 a.m. You're home for local news and talk. See you next Wednesday.